The tagline for the movie is, "You will believe a man can ride a bike."
I wonder if that was a quote or something that was said about the Muppet movie, because a huge feat in that is Kermit riding a bike. And that's like a, it was like a massive technical achievement. And I just, only just now when you said it out loud, did I connect that. I want to see if the Muppet movie came out first. I think it did. Yeah, 79. So I wonder about that. Otherwise, I just think it's a wonderful tagline. Just like from a pure nonsensical level. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Which is like the bike is the centerpiece of this movie.
Absolutely.
It is the conflict. It is his love interest. It is everything.
You're on Midnight Local, the podcast from How to Drink, where we just talk about things.
Movies.
Pop culture.
Maybe some video games.
That too. All the things.
The things. The stuff and things.
All of the stuff and the things on Midnight Local.
Let's get to it.
Meredith!
Hey, Greg.
I don't know why I'm doing this with my voice. What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You like that? When I ask a question and answer it without even taking a breath.
Yeah. Well, it's been predetermined.
That's true. That we will talk about. The, what do you want to talk
the
about
secret
was
sauce.
Fully staged.
What do you want to talk about? How about this?
Hey, Mayor, how was your weekend? Let me tell you about this story I wrote last night and pretend it's real.
Yeah, I think with Paul Reubens passing, we were talking about this. It came up a bunch, and then we both ended up watching it. And so when we both watch things, it seems only the best use of our time to cover it on the show.
We are true millennials. We must monetize all of our hobbies.
Look, it's the only way our generation can survive.
That's what they say. That's what they say. Are you aware that we have become the enemy of
millennials? We're starting to,
like people like Gen Z in particular talks about us like we're boomers, you know,
which is silly because we need each other so much. Like,
yeah,
if we're
I mean, they
ever
can't do
the
anything
boomers,
so without
yeah,
us,
we've got the numbers.
Yeah,
I see both ways still. I know they like to poke fun at the old things that we do. We do complain a lot. I will say that I on TikTok, whenever I run into a millennial, it's like, oh, is this going to be exhausting for me right now?
Well, two things I did run into. By the way, are we doing this right? We do banter at the top of the show now. Is this the rule?
Yeah, we're going to try for you guys to have a little bit more of a concise run of show, but we're still going to keep it loose at the beginning and sort of catch up here.
OK, I see two kinds of TikToks right now. There was one that went viral the other day from some Gen Z creator I don't know about, but I guess they're pretty popular. But they were complaining about how slow we talk, It was like an expansion of the millennial pause. And this person was kind of growling about it. I thought it was a very strangely performative voice, but that's fine. That's your deal. And also I said went viral. It has occurred to me that TikTok is an extremely focused and personalized garden. So I don't know if it went viral for anybody but me, but I saw a lot of stitches about it. But yeah, I was unaware that we were slow talkers. I did not know that.
Me too.
Yeah.
I guess I get so used to, I review our podcast in like double time. So when do watch pieces of it in our normal cadence.
Yeah.
I am like, whoa.
Yeah. The show, How to Drink really does that to me too. Because I edit at double time as well. I did see like a reply that I thought was very interesting. Not just fuck you, you young kids, but it was a lot of that. It was like, well, you learned to communicate via text. We actually have to speak to each other. And so you communicate, Gen Z, at the speed of text, which is not normal. The other generational TikToks I see, and I wrote like a whole video essay and shot it. And then I was like, nah, I don't like this. This is bad. I wrote about like generational divides and trying to say that they're not real. You know, it's bullshit. But
yeah.
I do see, and it was because it was in response to like all these millennials I see who are now on TikTok talking about what badasses we are. You know, the millennial generation really is the heart and soul of America. We fought the longest war in U.S. history, and we survived the 2008 financial crisis. And I don't need
a young whippersnapper. Yeah, I see a lot of that, too. We've been through 9/11. We've been through the financial crisis. Yeah, I think compared to generations prior, we have a tough time selling that, you know, we've really been through the worst.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I don't think that there's without merit. I think that the chest puffery is just like, shut the fuck up. Like you said, like, you know, 5 minutes ago, it was Gen X saying this. And 10 minutes before that, it was the boomers saying this. And
it's right.
Does everybody have to go through this cycle of just like my group of birth years is the badass one. Like, you got nothing else to hang your hat on? Christ.
I agree. I mean, there's no reason with the numbers that we have that things that all of these boomers need to remain in Congress. Like, as long as that's true, millennials and Gen Zers aren't getting out and voting. And that means I have a really hard time empathizing with any of them complaining online.
Yeah,
but both my
yeah.
choices are so bad. Okay, well, let's make it incrementally better until you get choices that you like. You can't go backwards and then get better choices in the future. It's not going to happen.
Well, first off, I mean, you say Gen Z and millennials, but like, I have seen many Gen Z creators say that, like, no, no, not us together, like us, not you. You are the bad guys, millennials. We are opposed to you. And I think those
people are not voting in record numbers. Well, I think these are
people who can't vote. I think these are very young people.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Although there's fewer and fewer Gen Zers that can't vote. We're getting Gen Zers are the workforce now.
That's true. It's interesting too, though. I have seen like a lot of generational I don't know what the word is I'm looking for here. Divide, war, gen war. I don't know. Like, just like millennials dumping on Gen Z, but then also saying like, but Gen Alpha, those kids have got it going on. They know what they're doing. And it's just like, well, first off, you're talking about high school kids. You're talking about your kids probably.
Yes. 10 minutes ago, that was Gen Z. 10 minutes ago, everyone was saying that about.
I remember that. Exactly. Yeah. Like, they're the future. They're going to save us. The world.
Yeah.
But like, I think that hasn't panned out so much. I do think that's also, I do see a lot of creators, and I think this is because I fell into a leftery space online, specifically Gen Z creators, but I guess millennials too, who are really, really deeply opposed to incrementalism. They just like want like revolution. And I always feel like that's a child's idea because like, yeah, you know, people starve to death during those.
Oh yeah. That's when things get that bad, think people are dying in mass already.
Yeah. Like, you don't know if you're not going to get shot, you know, whatever, like there's a good chance you will not survive the revolution and that also the revolution will go the worse way, not the better way.
Yeah. Right.
I feel like those are things that people without children get to say, you know, like you're not imagining your kids, just being in a pyre somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I also think like no one generation can fix anything. The reason the boomers are so powerful is because they vote each other in.
Yeah.
And they have all the money.
And I also think it's dumb to say that all boomers, like, I don't know, like, even the wrongest people in the world are right sometimes. Like, they don't have exclusively bad ideas, you know?
Right.
Like, they might have a lot of bad ideas.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> Mostly bad ideas, but they might be right about there and here and there. I mean, certainly Bernie's a boomer, or is he a silent generation?
He might be silent generation.
Yeah, he might be a silent. He's all right. I like Bernie. Right? We like him. I like you got like five Gen Xers in there. Do you are solidly a millennial, right? Because like you're a couple years younger than me. I am. Yes. I'm on that cusp.
Not a cusper. My sister and her husband are cuspers.
I don't know, man. I feel like if you have been, if in school growing up, if your bullies were of the previous generational cohort, you get to call yourself a cusper. And I got the shit kicked out of me by a lot of Gen Xers.
Okay, fair enough. You definitely right. Yeah, you definitely went to high school or started high school with Gen Xers.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And grade school. Like, yeah. Like,
right. You went through school with them. I did not. I'm right on that edge. Sometimes I feel like a cusper because all my cousins, my sister, everyone in my family was older than me.
Yeah.
So my influence is trend older.
I also think that stuff unfolds along economic lines too. Like the generational divide happens faster for rich kids or people with more money. Like, my wife and I are only 2 years apart, but she had a radically different experience of the roughly the same time frame that we did, because like her parents were responsible humans who had like
she had a cell phone or bank account. Had yeah.
My parents were like, hey, let's we'll go to ShopRite and write a bad check for the groceries because it won't hit my account for 4 days and I should have the money if I by the time that hits.
Right. But she had updated technology in her house and
I didn't, yeah, no, certainly. And I like specifically all the way through high school, I did not know a person with a cell phone and she didn't know a person without one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's only 2 years. So
when it comes to cell phones, I'm with her on that. When it comes to like in the house, internet and television, we were very delayed, but by choice, not by economic status. Like I never had cable. My mom refused to get anything but dial up until I was well into college.
Yeah, my dad didn't see any utility for that and actually frequently would disconnect our dial up. You know, I'll tell you what too. I always say that like I grew up without a lot of money, but that's not true. We never ran out of money for beer. It was just the other things we ran out of money for.
You didn't have enough money to survive the misprioritization of money.
That's correct. Yeah. There's always money for beer and some other illicit substances. Not always for food, though.
Well, speaking of these generations, I do think this sort of can tie into Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which I would say is a cusper.
Oh, yeah. That's why
it's
I was like leaned into that.
It's a cusper medium. Absolutely. Yeah.
I wasn't without purpose.
Yes. Well, and for me, so this is my first time watching anything Pee-wee.
No way.
Yeah. I was very aware of him as a child. I don't think that you could not be.
God, I loved Pee-wee.
I had tons of misinformation about this human.
Sure.
Like,
I think a lot of people do.
If that is a thing that is relatable to people, I'm interested to see it in the comments, because once you start surfing online, like this was pre-internet. So it's not really there. Like the things that I thought were true, you don't really find articles about that. It was all just like schoolyard nonsense and things my parents were fed.
Well, I mean, to that end, I kind of connected the dots myself too, which is that like, although, I mean, he was definitely a victim of the same satanic panic that a lot of people were at that time. They never connected him directly to Satanism, but like the satanic panic, a large portion of it was like child abduction, child disappearance, child molester panic as well. That was like at its core. There was like a thing, oh God, what's his name? He was a host of not Unsolved Mysteries, not Robert Stack. No, the other guy was was it America's Most Wanted? His son was abducted and killed, which is true.
Okay.
And he became very famous for that. Him and somebody else. This is like early 80s. I wish I had these dates in my mind. I don't know, but someone else can check this and hit it in the comments. But there was basically a couple of incidents where there was they got a congressional hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And he touted some numbers about how many kids in America go missing. And he said it was like 300,000 a year, and some other criminologist researcher threw out some numbers per day or per week or whatever that worked out to like 1.5 million a year, right? Which is insane.
Yeah, that's insane.
Right. Well, and it's really crazy because I was telling this to my wife the other day. I was like, do you know what the real number is? And she was like, well, what's the real number? Because it was, you know, it happened. I was like, sure, it happened. Anything happens. Yeah. But the real number, what was the real number? She was like, you know, she guessed. I was like, it was 60.
60.
And I didn't even believe that when it came out of my mouth because I was like going off of memory. I checked. You're right. It was 63.
Wow.
And actually one of those two people actually recently came out and said like, yeah, I just made that number up. It just sounded right. So this was like a stat that got thrown around. It was based not in fact. It was total crazy shit. And not to mention the fact that like, anyway, this set off a panic. And I think that Pee-wee, you know, let's just lay it out there. The guy got busted in Florida. I think it was after Joe was technically out of production for spanking it in a movie theater
an adult movie theater. Yeah.
And that, well, right.
They were showing porn, right?
Exactly. Right. Which is not something that was clear to us, right? Like it was in the public, it was a movie theater. Like he was just like out of his mind, whacking off in a movie.
Oh, theater. I got a worse version than that. My trail of misinformation starts with he was performing in front of a live audience and did this.
Just like that's
what
out his
I
dick.
That's what I believed in grade yeah. school.
Gotcha.
Piece that's one.
Crazy. Also, yep. I want to point out in grade school, I did not know what like playing with yourself or like whatever in public meant. So like yeah. I was also like, what's the big fucking deal? So his wiener fell out, whatever.
Yeah.
I knew the difference. To the best of us.
I knew what like purposeful exposure was. I think story that I understood, and look, my brain could have done this because someone said he exposed himself in a movie in a theater, not yes. a movie theater, just a theater, which then my brain might have written the rest of that story too.
For sure.
He was performing because this is a performer and that's what happened. So oh. I don't know if anyone directly told me that.
Oh, you being a theater kid thought the theater. You
the
didn't
theater.
Think of cinnamon.
This is an
cinema.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Cinnamon. You didn't think the cinema. my kids, just a reference to that now. My two kids really love the Mario Brothers movie. And I guess there's a scene in the very beginning, like, nice commercial. And Luigi says, this isn't a commercial, it's cinema. So now my kids run around yelling, it's cinema all the time. And I'm trying to
awesome.
Tell them what the fuck that means. And for some reason, I think the older one now understands what it means. The younger one has no idea. She just likes saying
it. Just like saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
But yeah, it was an adult movie theater, which also, you know, maybe on one level, you're like, well, you're there to watch the movie. You know, you might think as a kid, like, it's not acceptable to whip it out and play with it. But in fact, it's very acceptable and expected to whip it out and play with it. You know, these places are basically places for gay men to meet and have trysts.
So that's the other piece of information that I eventually got to was that actually this was a part of like raids and like attacks yeah. on gay men during the AIDS crisis. There's no evidence that he's gay.
No, except that he was hanging out at an adult movie theater. You're right, though. He never came out, so I don't want to out him. But like,
right.
I mean, that was.
Well, and he was honestly, he was married, but that doesn't mean anything.
He was married,
but he got married at one point in his divorce.
I had no idea he was ever married. That's news to me.
Let me look this up. I was looking some of this up last night to try and understand it, and he was married for a period of time.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Let me look this up.
Yeah, please do. That blows my mind. I didn't really look too deeply into it, but I thought that he
maybe
had never
it
had
was
any
a
relationship
performative
in public at all.
Okay, now I'm seeing no. Paul Rubens has never been married. So
I don't
I
think
just,
he's
like,
ever had a public like mate.
That's what Rachel was saying, because Rachel actually knew more about Pee Wee Herman than I did.
Wonder why.
This is so funny. I Googled this last night and got a completely different answer.
So much misinformation about Pee Wee Herman out there. About Paul
like,
Rubens.
Be untangled from me.
He's an unknowable like, man.
I do think that like because he lived through a persona and he is very yeah. private, yeah. like – there's little that's factually known. So these things that get shared.
And he was
there's
like
nothing else to talk about.
Adamant about being Pee Wee Herman.
Right.
Which I have a thought about, which is very interesting. I just want to come back to the movie theater. But like, I think it would honestly, he's a weirder dude if he was straight hanging out at that movie theater like that.
Yeah.
That is, if I'm not mistaken, and speaking out of turn, particularly like for an older generation, those places are part of the anonymous casual sex culture of the world of gay men. I could be way off base on that. And if I am, let me know. But that's always been that's certainly my understanding.
Well, and I wonder too, like he got arrested in Sarasota, Florida. I wonder if in LA, in New York, in Miami, places were more left alone, but in Sarasota, they get wind of it. And what else are they going to do but go arrest these guys?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, Sarasota seems like, well, first off, to counterpoint, they had such a theater in Sarasota.
Also true.
You know, I mean, like it was there. Something must have changed in the local culture or whatever. It was just like, now we're doing raids on them, you know?
Yeah. All right. So, I just wanted to touch on some of the misinformation. And so that's the reason why I never watched anything Pee Wee when I was a kid.
Well, what's interesting about it is I do remember my dad being pretty put off by it. Like he But I also never recall Pee-wee being like off limits. In fact, we had, I remember hating that movie, but we did watch it a lot. Pee-wee's Big Top Pee-wee, the sequel to Big Adventure, which it's not as good as Big Adventure at all. And for some reason we had that, not Big Adventure. I would have loved a VHS of Big Adventure when I was growing up. It was like a rare treat when you got to watch that, but we had Big Top Pee-wee. VHSs were expensive back then. We had what we had. Yeah. And a lot of them were garbage picked.
And that was beer money.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not even exaggerating that when my, on bulk, like garbage days, my mom would make us drive around at night in some of their fancy neighborhoods to steal people's garbage.
Yeah.
And that's how we got a lot of our furniture, mostly a lot of board games, all of which were missing pieces. Like every board game I had growing up was missing pieces. Why else was it in the fucking garbage? Yeah. None of them had the instructions. So like I had Mastermind, had no idea what to do with those stupid little circles. None. No fucking clue.
No internet to look it up.
Nothing. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, thanks, Mom. Love it. It's great.
All right. So you, how you got this VHS somehow, or you got the other one and watched it to death?
No. We had Big Top, but I'm just saying, like, there was, even though, like, I think my parents did kind of think, I think I remember it being like, well, I was an adult theater. Like maybe there was an initial panic, but I also remember that cooling off really quickly. And like Pee-wee was never banned in our house whatsoever.
Sure.
But yeah, it sounds like you were never into it anyway, though.
No, so it is Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like coming to it for the first time at 38. Like, yep. I've seen him in commercials. I've seen commercials for, because was his TV show a kid's show?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was Saturday morning.
With a big shoe or couch, something purple that talked.
A lot of stuff. He had Cherry. He had the magic screen. He had Conky, my favorite, which was a robot. Globe, Mr. Globe. There was Mr. Kite. There was like, he lived in a world that was alive.
Right.
And just in case there's any TV development people, producers listening, every time anybody ever has asked me, what would you do if you could develop How to Drink into a TV show or a streaming show? The answer is Pee-wee's Playhouse with alcohol. So, and like guest interviews. It'd be like a guest interview show, but it's Pee-wee's Playhouse with alcohol, where I am tormented by like nightmare versions of his puppets and I can't leave. I'm trapped there. I think at one point I decided it was a wealthy uncle's submarine that I was stuck inside of and couldn't leave. Nice. And there was like a torpedo tube that transported guests there whom I could only help go home by entertaining.
So not far off from where we're at already.
Yeah, the torpedo tube. But yeah, everything's alive and it was a kid's show. And
was it before or after this movie?
After the movie.
After the movie. Okay. Yeah.
So the movie was built off of the strength of a live performance he would do in LA, which turned into
Groundlings. It said he developed it.
He was a groundling.
Yeah. Okay.
And it turned into a HBO special. Early. And like back then, like HBO had like no money. And like they were hanging out in LA and if they saw something cool on stage, they were like, you want to be in pictures, kid? Like, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And so he had an HBO special that did really well. And off the strength of that, they got a movie made for like a really modest budget, $6 million, it looks like.
$6 million. Yeah. Well, let's go through some of the stats of the movie. It was Warner Brothers.
I just wanted to pause and say the stage show is very naughty. There's a lot of like sexual humor in it. They toned it way down for the movie, but then back up a little bit for the kids show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just like parents will catch, like things that parents will catch will go over the kids' head.
Yeah, there's like, for example, a scene that was viral on TikTok that I kept meaning to stitch, but I couldn't come up with anything really clever. But it was like Missy Vaughn riding his like mechanical horse and like very clearly she's having an orgasm. In the first season, he had, is his name Hector? He had like a pool boy who was always around. Like they toned it way back up for the kids' show, which I think is fascinating. They must have thought like, well, we overcorrected for the movie.
That is a quality of kids movies. With the exception of most Disney movies, that is a quality of kids movies in the 80s and 90s. Jokes for the parents that the kids miss.
Yeah. Well, Touchstone Pictures.
Yeah.
That's the example right there. Touchstone Pictures made family movies that were built for the whole family. That's also, by the way, the Touchstone owned by Disney. You said exception of Disney. Back when Walt was alive, you know, they especially at Disneyland, they had the Golden Horseshoe Review. That was a little something extra for daddy in that show. You know, it was like some real there was some raunchier jokes in there. And there was a real can-can, you know. He didn't mind entertaining the whole family. He kept it kosher, you know, but I mean, he didn't mind a little something in there for someone else. also, we're way off topic already. We should do we should do the Parent Trap, because as a kid, I accepted
the original
movie.
Parent Trap.
Absolutely, I accepted movie at face value as a kid. But like watching it now, I just like can't help but imagine just like, well, nobody at Disney understood divorce. They're just like they had the most nightmarish version of like child abuse divorce.
You can also do the remake of that one with Lindsay Lohan. I wonder how they compare. I think they're pretty close, actually.
Just like, it must be when you rip families apart and separate kids and put them on separate coasts. That must be what divorce is. No idea.
The decisions those parents made were outlandish in that
horrifying
movie. Oh, yeah, absolutely horrifying. I was just, as Lindsay Lohan popped up in my feed, she just had a baby. And I was like, for a certain part of millennials, like we pull for Lindsay Lohan more than any other star. I feel like we feel like our success as a generation lies in whether or not she's okay.
I wish her the best, but I'm going to disagree with that.
I know, not for you. Maybe that's what I say. My friends are very much always pulling for Lindsay. Like Oprah did a whole documentary about trying to help her dig out of her shit. Like, we've spent a lot of time focusing on whether or not Lindsay's going to be okay and if we destroyed this child. Stats for Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It was released August 9th, 1985 by Warner Brothers. It was PG, 1 hour and 31 minutes, $6 million. It grossed $41 million. I don't think it had a worldwide release, which makes sense.
Yeah.
It is a directorial debut of one Mr. Tim Burton.
I think it would have done well in France.
Yeah. And his first partnership with
Danny
his Elfman. Composer, Danny Elfman, who's all over this movie. Like,
oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. He scored the whole thing.
Written by Phil Hartman or Harmon.
No.
Is it Harmon or Hartman?
Hartman. Phil Hartman wrote it, which I did not know until the other day. It blew my mind.
Yeah. What's some of his other work?
Nothing. To my knowledge, he's never written anything else. He's a very famous SNL cast member. He was a groundling. He did a lot of voices on The Simpsons when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
His wife shot him in the head in a cocaine-induced rage. And
really?
Died. Yeah, he was like one of the first like celebrity deaths, or maybe only celebrity deaths, that really affected me. I was like bummed about that. Andy Dick, if I'm not mistaken, gets a lot of credit for his death because she was on like level, and then they had a party and he was like, hey baby, let's do cocaine together again, and that set off like that combined with I think maybe some antipsychotics or something she was on. Apparently a lot of people credit him with killing Phil Hartman. I don't think that's fair. I think that's bullshit, but I think that's a big part of why Andy Dick is kind of a persona non grata in some circles.
Okay.
Or was for many years. Because like I used to hear that, like, man, people hate that guy. people hate that guy.
Sure.
But yeah, I can't believe you don't know who Phil Hartman is. Or like you didn't.
I looked up his picture. I do know who he is, but I wouldn't have been able to name him.
Yeah, see, generational stuff. You're a millennial. I'm not.
And then obviously Paul Reubens and Michael Verhaal all were credited as
writers. I don't know anything about Michael Verhaal, but I do recall looking at the listing. Verhaal was like number three. So maybe he's like a story doctor or something like that.
And then Elizabeth Daly, who plays Dottie, is a huge voice actor. I think most notably Babe the Pig.
Oh, that's crazy.
And Tommy Pickles and Rugrats.
Yeah, I mean, she did a lot of stuff, though.
Francis, the guy who plays Francis, I was trying to place him the entire movie. And
well, it's
the
because he looks
I
like Andy Richter.
No, the reason I know him is because in A League of Their Own, he's in the final scene as the grown-up version of the little boy that's traveling on the bus with them.
Of course he is. Yes, of course. His two roles. I was trying to convince my wife that it was Andy Richter's debut, and I almost had her, but no, didn't.
Yeah, and then, I mean, really not a lot of people that you'd, like, maybe Judd Omen people recognize from Dune and Red Dawn. I thought he was on a procedural. I was like, he's on some procedural, but no, he's not.
Oh, he's the escaped criminal.
Escaped criminal for cutting the tag off of his mattress, yeah.
I recognized him from Red Dawn, yeah. And I think some other stuff, too. I mean, he seems like a guy who was around a lot.
Yeah.
Is that a typo? Is his name Judd Omen or is it
I think
Judd?
It's Judd. I think it's okay. Judd. I was typing while watching, so sure. don't take anything too seriously.
Diane Salinger, I had to look her up because I was fascinated by her jawline. What a jawline. My God. She has
it goes all the way up.
I think honestly, Tim Burton. No, I can't say it. It's too mean. Also, Tim Burton doesn't get any credit for that. He gets too much credit for Nightmare Before Christmas. It was not his film. His name is just on top of the director's name.
You said that, yep.
But I had to look up her IMDb. Have you done that?
I did. She's in Batman Returns as Penguin's mom. That's all I got.
Do you know who Penguin's dad is?
Who?
Paul Rubens.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But what I thought was interesting is that she alternated like back to back between doing softcore porn and straight films. And not a lot of people can pull that one off. I don't know how you know, usually
or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you head into the porn, it's real tough to come back unless you're going to work with like John Waters, who will happily do that.
But yeah.
You know who else is in this movie?
Hmm.
And you must have missed her, but Elvira.
There's just a poster of her. Is she actually in it?
The actress, not Elvira the character, but she is one of the biker ladies. She's like the big mama who wants to burn them alive. Okay. And I think I read that she's not really noticeable, but she played like a sassy producer in one of the film sets.
Okay. She's just sort of in the background a couple of places.
But she was another groundling.
Okay.
And they developed their characters together. Well, no, that's not true. I skipped that. No, she got cast to play Elvira. There was a casting call. What I think is interesting is that both Paul Rubens and what's her name? I can't remember her name.
The actress who
Elvira.
That's going to take me a second. So keep saying what you're saying.
Well, they both lived in character, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like these are two people who appeared in character on late night shows on, you know, whenever they were appearing, they were in character and they were like tight. They were pals, you know, they were both groundlings together. And I think that they must've compared notes. Maybe they decided they had a shared universe or something that we never saw explored.
Cassandra Peterson.
I think RuPaul said that Cassandra Peterson is a drag queen for living as Elvira.
Absolutely. I mean,
I haven't asked Ru, but I bet he would say the same about Paul Rubens.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, maybe not a king. I don't know. It's drag.
It's drag. Yeah, it's drag. 100%.
Drag child.
Well, we don't really have anyone who lives in character like this. Like Colbert did his show in character for years, but he himself, I don't know, though. He kind of, for a while, was sort of appearing as Colbert. That version of Colbert, but now he doesn't. Now that he's got his own show, he doesn't.
I bet a lot of people live their lives in character.
Also true. But also very true.
In character like
this. Yeah. Not like this. Not like this type of cartoonish character. Yeah.
I think for Elvira, it makes a lot of sense because she's, you know, a horror host. And I bet a lot of the horror hosts did really embody their characters both on and off camera. All right. Back to the film.
Yeah, so you know, I just want to start at the beginning.
Well, here are some interesting questions, I think, that the movie raises right away. Pee-wee lives alone.
Yeah.
He lives alone. He has a Rube Goldberg machine that makes his own breakfast. His nemesis, Francis Buxton III, has a dad.
Yes.
Is Francis a who are they both children? Are they both some kind of creature that this universe has in it? That's my opinion, by the way, is that no, these man children creatures just exist in this world.
I kind of thought it was that, yes, that Francis is, he and Pee-wee are the same.
Yeah. And they're both adults whom are not.
But Francis's family is like mega wealthy. So why would he ever, he doesn't need to create his fantasy home. It exists for him already.
That's interesting. I never connected that. Yeah, he's got that crazy bathtub that he wears a bathing suit in, which is fine. But, you know, you're not really, listen, if you're wearing a bathing suit, you're not in the bath.
It's also clearly chlorinated.
You're in a tub.
Body of water.
Yeah, you're not in the bath. Rather, if you're wearing a bathing suit, you're not in a bath. You are in a swimming pool. Okay, you're in a swimming pool.
Or a hot tub.
Although I think a hot tub, you know, you don't need to be.
Goes, you know, either way.
Yeah, you don't need to be wearing a bathing suit in either a pool or a hot tub. But if you are, you're not in a bath. That is the rubric here. We could have a chart that would explain this.
A Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Bath, swimming pool, both.
Yeah, exactly. A flow chart would work too, I think. Yeah. Are you wearing a bathing suit?
Oh, I also want to start. I want to remember to do the taglines for these. And this one has an absolutely wonderful tagline.
I love it.
The tagline for the movie is, "You will believe a man can ride a bike."
I wonder if that was a quote or something that was said about the Muppet movie, because a huge feat in that is Kermit riding a bike. And that's like a massive technical achievement. And I just now, when you said it out loud, did I connect that. I want to see if the Muppet movie came out first. I think it did. Yeah. 79. So I wonder about that. Otherwise I just think it's a wonderful tagline, just like from a pure nonsensical, level. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Which is like the bike is the centerpiece of this movie.
Absolutely.
It is the conflict. It is his love interest. It is everything.
Yeah. And speaking of love interests, Dottie wants to fuck him.
Oh yeah. And so does, the woman you talk, the jawline woman, Simone.
Does she?
Well, I think it's on the table. I think it's definitely on the table.
Oh, it's definitely on the table. It's definitely on the table. She would have definitely given him a role and see how things happen. You know, he's an enticing character, but you don't want to mess with him. He's a rebel and a loner.
A loner and a rebel. And it's the only time his voice sort of drops and he looks at her and he's very serious for a moment.
Yeah. Hey, you know, when he gets accosted by the inexplicable street person in the rain in LA, who just says, "We don't like strangers around here." The director whose name is now escaping me.
Tim Burton.
That's Tim Burton's cameo.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, when you look at him, because like, clearly Paul Rubens is playing a man child. Tim Burton underneath all of that makeup looks like a child. He looks so young.
Just running through it. So he's at home. We see his wild home, which you sort of talked about with his breakfast. They reveal that his bike is under lock and key. It's his prized possession.
It's in a secret chamber.
Yes. He runs into Francis, his neighbor, who it's his birthday, and he says he wants his bike for his birthday. And so we know the bike is in danger. And then he goes into town to do some shopping, locks up his bike with a mile of chain link to a clown.
There's an animatronic clown out in this outdoor mall.
Yes. And then we meet Dottie and he comes outside and his bike has been stolen.
It's also implied that Dottie is a bicycle wizard.
Right. She is running the bike shop that he's getting his horn fixed so it can be louder.
She's the mechanic in Mad Max. She's the guy. How'd you get all this together? You know, it took a little from here, a little from there. You know, it's the last of the V8 interceptors. You know, it's the last of the two-wheeled Schwinns or something.
If he was going to fall in love with anyone, it would be a woman like that.
For sure. And actually, there's like a gang of like BMX kids there who at first you think they're kind of making fun of him.
But I like thought that was going to be a conflict.
But by the end of the scene, they're just like, Pee-wee's, like, it doesn't seem that way. It seems like they are all jealous that he has caught the eye of Dottie.
Yeah, and he's cool to them. Like, they have no problem with Pee-wee.
Well,
no
one... it sets you up for a reversal, because immediately before that, he's trying to show off and, like, flips off the bike tragically and gives you a classic, "I meant to do that" line to some other BMX kids. I guess BMX was huge in L.A. at this time.
The only one who really has conflict with him in the beginning is Francis his sort of counterpart. Also, is their back and forth exchange was like every quote from my childhood. Like, "I know you are, but what am I? And that's my name. Don't wear it out." Does that stuff come from this movie?
Yeah, from Pee-wee. Absolutely. 100%. Huh? Those are all Pee-wee-isms. I mean, he had a, that's a good point. Like, even if you weren't watching the show, there was a huge effect on the culture here. I think that Pee-wee's Playhouse is responsible for the Memphis design movement. No, that's not true at all. But
it's like, no comment.
You know what Memphis design is?
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do. If you look it up, it's Delia Dietz's deal.
Oh, okay.
She's like goth Memphis, and it came from Italy, the Memphis group. 1980 to 1987 is when it was active. There's all of these like companies that make like reproduction.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, exactly. There's all of these companies that make reproduction, like mid-century modern furniture. I really want like a direct-to-consumer Memphis reproduction company so I can get some sweet Memphis pieces.
If you're watching the YouTube version, we'll put some images up on screen.
It's just obnoxious. And it's an Italian design group that was not named for Memphis, Alabama? But Memphis, the capital of
Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know my Deep South. And I don't know if Tennessee's in the Deep South either, actually. I think that one's excluded from the quote Deep South. But Memphis.
Tennessee's.
Well, like Florida's up, not Deep South. Deep South is a specific little circle there.
Yes.
And I know Mississippi and Alabama are part of it. But yeah. The named for the capital of the old kingdom of Egypt. Yeah. Anyway. Home of Elvis and the ancient Egyptians. But
so this is losing the bike is definitely our inciting incident, because now we are on the search to recover the bike.
Act one is over. We've met our players. The bike is lost. We have a conflict.
Yeah. And the police can't help. The police are so funny because like they were so sweet to him but like still realistic. Like the police are in our world, not Pee-wee's world.
Exactly.
They're like, "We don't have the resources to search down every bike, buddy. I'm sorry.
It's a bike, my friend. It's a bike."
Exactly. And so then he remembers Francis wanted his bike, and that's where you get the Francis bathtub scene where
he tries to murder Francis.
Yeah, so he's fighting him in the bathtub.
And
I believe for a moment that Francis didn't have it, because I was like, this is a bigger deal than that.
This could be a red herring, yeah.
As it turns out, he did, but he hired someone to steal the bike for him. And now that he knows that Pee-wee...
This shit's too hot, man. I don't want
to... Yeah, because Pee-wee goes on the radio and he's like, "He's never going to quit, dude. You got to take this off my hands."
I love that. He's on the right. Yeah, exactly. They have like the 40-hour like evidence meeting that all of his the population of his universe, like what was his name? Fantastic Pete or whatever. It was like an old dude with a multicolored mohawk and stuff.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I saw a lot of people that lived in this world, but I didn't know them from other stuff.
They're not. To my knowledge,
they're not.
No, okay. They certainly don't show up on the kids show.
Right.
No, to my knowledge, that's it.
And then he's walking home in the rain and these four menacing guys come out of the woodwork.
One of whom is Tim Burton.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of those guys. Okay. Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it says to him, like, "We don't do it. Like, you've never been around here before. We don't like new people." Yeah. And he just like gives them like a full hiss and they all run away. Yeah. It was wonderful.
And then the adventure begins, because he goes to a psychic who steals his wallet, which doesn't just rob him, but keeps the whole fucking wallet.
That's why he doesn't have his wallet. Yeah. I didn't connect that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. She steals his wallet.
Yeah. It just keeps the whole thing. Could have just taken the cash. No, keeps the whole thing. And tries to convince him, tells him that it's in the basement of the Alamo.
So now it's become a road trip movie.
Yeah, he's got to get to the Alamo. And we have, from there, it does kind of turn into a series of sketches that are connected. I have to say, I think maybe, I don't know who said it about that movie. And I was like, I don't know. I haven't seen it in a minute. I don't know. Was it you or was it my wife said that it's a series of sketches? And I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. I do agree with it, but I do think that it does it better than Groundhog Day does. Groundhog Day really feels like a disconnected series of sketches that have nothing to do with each other. At least
we should revisit that one. Because, we should. Yeah, I never thought about that with Groundhog Day.
You would be heart. What is the plot in Groundhog Day? What is the driving action?
He's stuck in this world. And
I'm so sorry. Not Groundhog Day.
Okay.
I'm thinking Bill Murray and Groundhogs, Caddyshack.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. Whoa. All right, that makes more sense.
Caddyshack. Yeah, Caddyshack really feels like a disconnected series of sketches.
We should talk about Groundhog Day on the show still, because that is a wonderful movie, and there's so many great theories about that movie.
All right.
You don't like Groundhog Day?
I've never been big on it. I have nothing against
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that movie a lot.
Okay. It's
okay. It's fine. I guess it is about a man's personal growth, so it's not really up your alley. Like, that is the whole movie, is his growth out of being a cynical asshole into someone who sees more out of life.
Yeah, sure.
Over thousands of years.
Yeah, I understand. I get it.
All right, we won't be derailed by Groundhog Day. We're on a roll here.
I will say what we should watch is What About Bob?
That's also a good movie.
Because that is an insane movie that I thought was a comedy as a kid, and now I see as a horror film.
Horror movie.
And I maintain that on my most recent watch through of it, he kills at least one person in his pursuit of doctor, whatever his doctor's name is.
All right. Well, we'll add it to the list. All right. Now I agree. It gets much more vignette-y now that we're on the road trip.
And we don't need to go through every sketch beat by beat. There's a couple of really great ones.
They're quick. Yeah. Well, and then you get kind of your most Tim Burton moment in the truck driver.
Oh, no. I was going to say yeah, for sure. I personally felt like the clown dream was the most Tim Burton-y moment.
And that is, but like specifically when her face goes sort of claymation.
For sure.
It's very Beetlejuice.
It definitely is. Claymation was a big thing in the Pee-wee's Playhouse show as well.
Mm-hmm.
The kids show. There was always a lot of claymation on that show. Penny cartoons, which were great.
Yeah. But this does feel very Muppet movie now that you bring it up, because they do the road trip and you meet this cast of characters that are all friends.
Yes.
And all have their own shit going on.
Yes.
And at the end, you see them all. You see them all again in the sort of final moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Also very musical-esque.
Oh my God. The movie that they make at the end of the movie about his big adventure is
amazing.
I don't think I ever appreciated it quite as much as it needed to be appreciated until my most recent watching. The re-delivery of the, I know you are, but what am I?
You are such a pushover.
I know you are, but what am I?
So good. So good.
It's good. It's really good.
The X1 needs to cool off. It's just like so insane.
But yeah, he makes it to the Alamo. I guess the woman who plays the
Jan Hook.
Yeah, she improvised like all of that dialogue in the Alamo tour.
They're all groundlings. So she's another groundling. She was a regular on SNL for many years. I love Jan Hooks. She's great.
Yeah, she takes you through the Alamo tour, and we discover there is no basement at the Alamo, which I wonder if that's true or not.
Sure it's true.
Well, you'd think it's like I don't know.
Apparently it's the most common question on tours.
Really? Is there a basement at the Alamo?
Yeah. When are we going to get to see the basement? Tell you,
incredible.
Man, Pee-wee changed the world. No, and I think my favorite vignette, just because I love the absurdity of it, is the hobo who just won't stop singing and he has to throw himself off the train to get away from it.
Like, it's true.
It's such a dumb, perfect idea. I think it's wonderful.
I was going to say, I love the biker bar as well. The Satan's angels or whatever they are.
So we watched this movie the other night when my wife's friend from college was visiting, and she had never seen it before, and happily it was right up her alley. She loved it. She was blown away by the dancing, and we were both like, "You've never seen this dance before?" She was like, "When would I have seen this dance?" I was like, "Any 8-year-old at any playground." Like,
I never seen
it. Oh god, dude, we all did this fucking dance.
I remember the forward and back thing, but
other than that.
Do they do it in the song comes up? I don't know if they actually do the dance in Ninja Turtles, the Ninja Turtles movie.
I don't think that song does come up in the Ninja Turtles.
It does. I'm pretty sure. I'll look it up for sure.
It does come up in the Sandlot.
Huh?
When they're riding. I don't even like that movie. I never saw it really, but I remember it being on all the time. They're riding some carnival rides and chewing tobacco and listening, and that song is playing, and then they all throw up.
Ninja Turtles tequila song. It does. It comes up.
Man, it might. They might do the dance. I don't know.
That's where I remember it from.
That's interesting.
I wonder what the origin of that dance is.
Do they do that dance?
No, kind of. Not that dance. No, it's not exactly that dance.
Okay.
But it is a silly, they do a dance to it.
That's a great movie too. We should revisit.
I love that movie.
It's so good.
Oh, I remember too, when he yells, damn, like as a kid, you were like, because we got to watch it. We like got to watch it in daycare because it's the one swear in the movie. But sure. It was such a big deal.
A big one too. Damn.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible, man.
So yeah, pretty much after that, he ends up in the heist. How does he end up in the hospital after the biker? Oh, he runs through the sign. They give him a bike to borrow. He just runs it directly into the sign.
Yeah. Why do I? Oh, because in the hospital, he has the dream with the clowns. Yes. Yeah, there's two dream sequences. There's the clown dream. And then there's an earlier one.
There's an earlier one. And the opening sequence is a dream as well, but not as dreamlike.
That's true. Yeah. But I think there's another nightmare about the bike earlier.
He's sleeping at another point. He has two nightmares about the bike.
Dinosaur dream.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because he was at that site. Also, for my Fallout fans, that location is strongly revisited in Fallout New Vegas with the dinosaurs and all of that, where, and I think even the storyline, there's like a storyline. I think that's right. I think there's a plot line in that location that kind of mirrors the Pee-wee thing.
So pretty much from there, he finds out that his bike has been gifted to a child actor. He goes to Hollywood to get it back. He steals it. There's a long chase scene.
Incredible chase sequence.
Incredible chase scene. Through back lots of Warner Brothers.
The driving the boat and stuff. Oh, my God.
Yes. Which ends in him saving a bunch of animals from a burning pet store.
Snakes last.
Yes. Snakes last. He keeps looking at the snakes.
I love that he comes out with all the goldfish.
And he's concerned there's more fish in the store. And then, his story gets optioned to be made into a movie. And we end back at the drive-in with our whole cast of characters watching his realized version of the movie. His acting and his cameo in the movie.
Yeah.
Where he's the bellhop.
Yes. Yes. And he's awful.
He can't help himself, but looking at the camera is incredible.
And he's doing this voice because he's supposed to be a grown-up. Yeah.
He just keeps looking into the lens.
It's phenomenal. It's so good. And he finally gets to go on his date with Dottie.
Kinda. Yeah. I don't think he's there for her.
Well, she specifically wanted to take her to the drive-in at the beginning of the movie.
Right. They're there. They're both there, but I don't think she would have gotten him there without his movie also being there.
Well, there's a big phone call or something where he says it will go to the drive-in or whatever at the end of the movie.
He's lying to her.
No, that's what? There's a phone call where there's static. He pretends there's static when he needs money to get home from the Alamo. Mm-hmm, but at the end of the movie, just before the climax, I think there is a beat where he tells her we can go to the drive-in for real and it's authentic. I think there is. Am I misremembering?
Maybe. He's a real dick to her on the phone when he calls and asks her for money. Like, that is the only moment in the movie where I'm like,
let's break it up. I gotta go.
It's a different kind of arrested development. Like, he knows this girl likes him. He uses her for money and then, he's nasty in that moment.
Yeah, he is. That's fair. I don't think they I'm assuming they didn't really think about it all that much. The score in this movie is everything. If people were singing, it would be a musical. I like that note of yours. Sorry, I stole it from you. I didn't mean to.
That's okay. No, I think like Danny Elfman, is all over this movie. Score is huge. I don't know how else to describe it, but in moments, the score is pushing the entire emotional lift of the scene because there's a leap between the grown man, how he acts, and how much he cares about this bike, how horrific it is that he loses it. And anywhere there's a gap in that, the music does it for you.
Yeah. That's an amazing point. I would not have considered that. I think we brought this up on the show before, and I think we're going to have to watch this movie at some point. But Danny Elfman's first movie, this is his first movie with Tim Burton. Prior to this, he did a movie called Forbidden Zone, which I also think is very Burton-esque. I think I think it's got more Burton aesthetics in it than this one does. And I wonder, because their collaboration was so tight, if some of that doesn't end up coming from Danny Elfman. Because this movie has none of that. And I find that so refreshing. Like that it's just like a movie. It's not a Tim Burton joint, you know?
Yeah. You're talking about Pee-wee.
Yeah. It gets a little tiresome.
Well, because the auteur of this movie is Paul Reubens.
That's true. That's a good point.
And you see Tim Burton moments that become his whole thing. Yeah.
Great movie. Super fun. Everybody should see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
A laugh out loud. Oh, man. That Large Marge scene that you were talking about, though, that was like some nightmare shit. Like, that was a scene we didn't watch. That was too much.
Really?
Dude, that's
there's a piece of trivia in front of me that says she does not blink during the entire telling of her story.
I buy that.
Yeah, the actor. I was going to say, I mean, it is a movie that I wish I had come to sooner.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, it's funny. I understand its humor. I wish I had watched it with like a 10 to 12 year old.
Sure.
Because I think they would have been just like not breathing laughing, which would have made it a lot more fun for me.
Sure.
I think like, I see it's funny. I get why it is what it is, but I just came to it way too late in life to be like really cry laughing at it.
Well, I did.
Well, because you're remembering how you felt as a kid watching
it. I guess. I don't know. I think I'm laughing at it in new ways than I did when I was.
Okay. But it was certainly a movie that I was quoting a lot, having even not seen it.
I wanted to ask you, so I know your lady wife, Rachel, I don't know if we're using her first name on the show or not. She is a huge Tim Burton fan.
Yes.
And she had never seen this before.
Yeah, she loved it. She watched it with me last night.
Cool.
She was very into it.
That scene, she's also a Texan.
Uh-huh.
The thing with the deep in the heart, is that real? Does that happen?
It is real. She didn't experience that much as a kid. I have lots of other Texan friends that that do that. Or they don't do that, but like it's a part of the Texas culture.
I wonder how much of that isn't Pee-wee, though, with the influence.
Maybe. I'll have to ask, because that also shows up in Whip It, the movie about roller derby with Elliot Page.
Oh.
Because they're in Texas for that movie.
I was like, the Devo biopic? Like, what is the
Whip It? No. So they have a moment where they're singing that song as well. And I don't see my friend who made me aware of that song. I don't see as a huge Pee-wee guy, but I'll ask him. But the Remember the Alamo was a part she found really funny.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Alamo.
And they all cheer. Yeah. Yes. Specifically, Rachel is from San Antonio. So definitely.
She's Alamo peeps. Home.
Yeah, that area, boy, has it changed. It does not look like that anymore.
No.
It's so built up around the Alamo. It's like this tiny thing, and there's all these hotels and stuff around it.
I'm not surprised.
It's kind of sad.
Got to make that money. Oh, can we talk? We should talk about Paul for a minute.
We should talk about what?
I got a follow-up on Paul, though. So we talked about his arrest in Florida for indecent exposure at the pornographic movie theater. But then in 2000 or 2001, and it's a real shame because his career was just getting back on track, he was arrested for possession of child pornography. And
oh, that's a little different.
Yeah, but they dropped the charges. He pleaded to a significantly lesser charge. And it's really hard to get like an honest accounting of what happened there. I think that maybe it was sealed. I had read one account that the DA never even viewed the materials in question. Paul Rubens's version of it is, look, I collect vintage kitsch pornography. I had bought a huge lot of stuff, materials, and I had no idea what was in there. It turns out some of the performers in some of these pieces were under 18. So at least by his account, none of it was kiddie porn. It was stuff that was shot in the 50s where you might have a 17-year-old man or something like that in the image. That was his version of it, whether or not that's true. I read another account that linked his arrest to that of Jeffrey Jones, and that they were ratted out by the same underage performer. I only read that in one place. And again, I can't find that reasonably corroborated. And it certainly doesn't match even anything close to what Paul Rubens said. I will say this. I've never heard anybody have anything negative to say about that guy.
Notably when he passed. Like, yeah, I saw a lot of comedians coming out and talking about how much they loved him and how generous he was.
Natasha Lyonne has remained friends with him forever. And I think, you know, people who I would expect to like say like that guy's a fucking creep, you know, if he was.
Where that's true. Yes. Hopefully. I hope that that is the case. But, you know, I also look at there's been a lot of ignoring of other figures in the industry.
But this is not one who had any power. Not much to be gained by being Pee Wee Herman's friend, you know, in 1997 or whatever.
I suppose. I mean, more in 97 certainly than now, but
well, he's dead.
Well, 2 years ago in the 2000s. But I don't know, like Louis C.K. comes to mind.
Yeah.
Where like Sarah Silverman's just like, yeah, I thought, you know, we had sex jokes going on. And I thought it was funny. And it's like, yeah, but when you hear that he's doing this to people who aren't unarguably equal power footing right. from him, does that change your perception at all? Like,
I think that she has kind of changed her tune to that.
Oh, she has now, certainly. But and look, I understand that when you've known people for years, and especially in like comedy and theater settings, like lines are crossed. It's usually pretty clear when it's consensual and not consensual.
Sure.
Like I think what happened with Al Franken was a different story, a different line.
So I've heard that assessment of it. I've also heard the assessment that like the fact that he so immediately resigned means that there was a hell of a lot more that was about to
more
talk
and
about
he didn't
that.
Want to dig up.
But I don't know Maybe. About that. I don't know yeah. though. I mean, yeah, I mean, one, he's let's talk about Louis C.K., I guess. He's been trying to make a comeback. I've seen him on TikTok.
He's doing fine.
If he had like some mental compulsion that he's like made amends about, do you think that you can give that guy a pass, or do you think he's writ off for life? I don't know. I'm just asking your opinion on this.
Like, I don't want the guy to suffer for the rest of his life. Does he need to be a celebrated okay, public figure? I don't know. He's certainly not talking about his struggle getting better.
I saw him make a joke about it that I thought was actually kind of funny, but it was just basically like, how glad are you that nobody knows what your kinks are? Which I was like,
okay. Yeah, I think if you've proven that you can't help yourself but take abusive positions of power, you probably shouldn't be put back in Ooh, positions of power.
That's a really fair point too.
Yeah,
that's a fair point. Anyway, we're talking about Paul Rubens. no reason to put his, I don't think there's any, personally, I see no reason to look. I mean, I think that's true too, right? Like they dropped the charges.
There's so
as much as I know about it, they dropped the charges.
About misinformation that yeah. I find it hard to trust any piece of information that I get about him.
Yeah.
Positive or negative. So I have to rest on the theory that I know nothing.
I feel that way about a lot of people actually.
But, yeah.
You know, not all people, but some people.
You don't have people coming forward against Paul Rubens. There's nothing like that. No. So
no. So I say he gets a pass.
Yeah. It's a downer note to end this on, but.
No, I don't. Well, I mean, it was his most recent news piece prior to, but he had been working. He was in Mystery Man. He was in Blow. I think he was in a couple of other films. And then this kind of derailed that.
His cancer.
His arrest there, yeah.
Oh, his arrest.
Yeah.
What year was he arrested?
For the child pornography? It was in like 2000 or 2001.
Okay.
So it like, and that's right when his career, like he was, you know, coming back after Pee Wee.
Got it. Many of the movie's props came from the personal belongings of Paul Rubens. So it seems there is, it's more than just a persona. It seems like there is some crossover between Pee Wee Herman and Paul Rubens.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, his, when you see the stage show that he did on HBO, I mean, like it's a very fully realized set with a lot of props, and it is very similar to what they ended up doing for the kids show. And I think that like he must have owned all that stuff, you know, because like he was doing it on the stage at the Groundlings too. He probably acquired it over a while. And, anyway, really like this movie. I think more people should see it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, and it felt right to do. It was timely, but yeah. Also, I'm glad I finally visited Pee Wee Herman, because it's just like, I knew I had wrong information and then I put it out of my head and then I got too old for it and I just never really watched it.
Sure.
But now I'm glad that I have.
You should check out the kids show. It's interesting, particularly season one, because you get to see 6-year-old Natasha Lyonne in.
I love that.
In it as well. She's one of the Clubhouse gang. Only season one. They had replaced her for season two.
Both of us are big fans of Natasha Lyonne. Midnight Local.
I've never
friend of Midnight Local, Natasha Lyonne.
I don't know if we can say that.
If she wanted to be, I'm just saying the door's open.
The door's open to just about anybody. We, you know,
I don't know about that.
If you want to call yourself a friend of the show, fine. We need all the friends we can get over here at Midnight.
Yeah, sure. That is true.
We'll take what we can get, okay? I've never seen All About Evil, which is, I think, a horror comedy she did, but it's always on Shudder. And it looks very bad, though, so I don't know if I want to. I haven't brought myself to sit down and watch it. There's a lot of bad horror movies out there. But that's just my opinion. All right, this has been Midnight Local.
We could do a year on bad horror movies.
It could be a whole podcast.
It could be, yeah. I'm sure it is.
Many
sure
times it is. Many times over. Nothing new under the sun.
Agreed. All right. Yes, this has been Midnight Local.
Thank you for hanging out with us. Our friends of the show, who we desperately need. We'll take all the friends we can get, as I said.
Yeah, tell your friends. Tell five friends.
Tell your ma. Tell your pa. Tell them all.
Thank you to Annie Villalobos, who edits and produces the show for us.
Thank you to Studio 71 for making this possible as well.
Yes, and also to Heather Vaughn for the wonderful artwork that you see.
Ooh, I love that artwork. I do.
And now we should also include her husband, Tom.
Oh, he did the new thumbnails, right?
Right, who has expanded upon that artwork for us. Yeah, Tom.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
Yes, that is. So now you'll be seeing on the YouTube thumbnails, they're looking a little bit more fresh and dynamic. That's because of him.
Infreshened, dynamicized.
And then a big you're welcome.
To Studio. No, to Epidemic Sound. Yeah. We got to get a composer to do some original music for us.
Yeah, that's the next step.
I think we need a lot more views before we can justify that expense.
Yeah, once we can get some more views, some more cash in the bank, yep. We'll be able to pay people for their work.
Yes, we'd like to do that. All right, guys, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us on Midnight Local, and we'll see you next week with another one.
Bye-bye.